Welcome to the Mama Matters podcast. Whether you're expecting, you've recently given birth, or you're just starting along your fertility journey, it's time to get down to the nitty-gritty and sort fact from fiction. I'm your host, Rosie Dumbrell, physiotherapist and pregnancy expert. Mama Matters aims to provide an easily digestible, up-to-date and evidence-based approach to pregnancy, birth and motherhood, with a side dose of humour along the way. Interviews from the industry's leading experts and experience of my own adventures as a mother to three gorgeous boys under four. I want to share the stuff that helps to grow confidence throughout motherhood. Mama Matters is a podcast by Lenny Rose Active, and this is what you can expect to hear in upcoming episodes.
So we know that 40% of women will still need some recovery and rehabilitation work to get that ability to transfer load across her abdominal wall normal again postpartum. So, you know, that's close to half, and that's a lot of people. So that is why we are chatting about it today. Hi ladies, welcome back. Welcome to episode 59. I'm really excited to be chatting to you today about diastasis or diastasis. There's a lot of different ways to say it depending on where in the world you come from. But same. Diastasis. So there you go. Particularly surrounding the postpartum period. So we did record back in season one a comprehensive episode on diastasis or diastasis in pregnancy. So that's in season one, episode 28. So it's a really great listen if you are in pregnancy. And, you know, a really great place to start with your postpartum recovery is by doing pregnancy well. So I highly suggest you go back and have a listen to that one. Before listening to today's episode, if you are in pregnancy, or if you'd like a little bit more just general background, we are going to go pretty deep into the sort of science and the research behind why diastasis or diastasis occurs, and when it's considered sort of abnormal, and what we can do about it in particular to help recover normal abdominal wall function, normal core function, normal continence, and all of the associated things that are affected often through the pregnancy to postpartum period. So, you know, I really, really believe that education and knowledge is power, and all power to you for listening in and for educating yourself on how to better move your body and look after yourself through pregnancy and postpartum. That's what this podcast is all about. And, it's a real passion project of mine. So I do hope that you love the content. And as always, if you are loving what you're listening to, just make sure you subscribe and tell your mama mates, give us a shout out on social media. The more people that we can reach, I guess the more positive impact we can have. And that's what it's all about. So, yeah. All right. So most of you will know my background. I'm a physio. I've just had my fourth bubba, little Pia, a girl after three boys. That's so exciting. I'll definitely be shutting up the baby making factory after this, because I've had four children in 5 years, and certainly my body feels that. But, you know, I'm really feel like I am a testament to my own knowledge, because not only have I had four vaginal deliveries with no sort of issues or symptoms in terms of pelvic floor, continence, prolapse, things like that. The caveat will be that if you've had a vaginal delivery, everyone will have some degree of prolapse, probably a grade one is that minimum, but it's where you won't have any symptoms at all. So I'm sure that that is the case for me, and I'll have my six-week check with my women's health physio next week. No symptoms whatsoever, no tears. And I'm at 6 weeks with baby number four postpartum, and I would say I still do have a small gap in my abs, or a diastasis, which you'll find is normal when you hear the research. But it's almost back to what's considered normal in a healthy, non-pregnant nulliparous, or someone who hasn't had any children. So, you know, I really do feel that I am testament to my own knowledge and practicing what I preach in terms of core and breath-driven movement. And, so we can't wait to dive in to that in a little bit more depth for you, so that you too can experience pain-free pregnancy and postpartum, and, you know, just optimal recovery, which is what we all want. To kick off, what is diastasis or a diastasis? We know that it's an increased gap or widening of the bellies of the rectus muscle. It is a normal part of pregnancy, because as the belly grows and as our abdominal wall is stretched, this has to occur to allow the growth of our baby. And so it's naturally the abdominals, that sort of six-pack or rectus sheath, is going to have to separate a little bit. So the two sort of strap-like bellies of the rectus run up and down from the xiphoid process to the pubic bone and all the sort of bottom of the rib cage to the front of the pelvis. And, yeah, this is the area that's obviously most put out when we're growing the baby. And the line that you'll see in the middle of really well-defined tummies is called the linea alba, and it's a connective tissue area that separates the two bellies. And this is where the gap happens, and so the separation happens, and we get an obvious sort of gapping or distance between those two bellies. So in quite a few studies now, we know that by 30 weeks, 100% of women will have a diastasis, and we know that it will persist in the early postpartum period for a lot of women. But in order to classify it as abnormal, we need to know what normal widths are. So we had some studies done by Beer et al. In 2009, and they measured the distance between the rectus sheaths at three spots. So the xiphoid, which is just sort of the bottom of the rib cage, also if you walk your hands down your sternum, that breastbone, the bottom of that, that's the xiphoid process, and then above and below the belly button, that's the 2 points there. So they found that the mean width of the gap between the bellies of the rectus in someone who is normal, who hasn't had a baby, has no sort of symptomatic diastasis, the mean width is 7 millimetres, so less than a centimetre, plus or minus 5 millimetres at the xiphoid, 13 millimetres plus or minus 7 at the 3 centimetres above the belly button, and 8 millimetres plus or minus 6 millimetres at 2 centimetres below the belly button. So, you know, what does that mean? We roughly, you know, the normal population, we want no more than, you know, probably just under a centimetre gap at those 3 points. So it is considered abnormal or persisting in the postpartum period if the gaps are greater than that. But also, as you'll find out, it's not just about the gap, it's about the way that we transfer load through the area and whether or not our tummy muscles and our abdominals can take load without a distortion of load across that area. So no doming or coning or sort of invagination or sucking in of that area, and no other pressure-related symptoms or continence symptoms. So we know that recovery-wise, 66% of women will still have this gap, which is considered an abnormal gap, at 6 weeks postpartum, 41% at 6 months postpartum, and 33% at 12 months postpartum. So, you know, that's, you know, saying that a third of women will still have a diastasis at 12 months postpartum, and that's, you know, a lot of times when a woman is going into being pregnant again, and, you know, they're considering that sort of 2-year gap between their children quite often. So you're potentially going into a second pregnancy with still abnormal function in your abdominal wall and pelvic floor, and that's going to not stand you in great stead for the future pregnancy and the subsequent postpartum period. And, you know, we know that around 50% of women in their first pregnancy will experience stress urinary incontinence, probably more. And then when we get to second pregnancy, it's higher. It's more like 75 or 80% when they cough, sneeze, laugh, jump, will experience leakage. And, you know, it's really not that much fun. And it is, you know, in my, you know, in my mind, a lot of that is preventable. You know, there is a pretty significant mechanical stress and mechanical load, particularly at the end of pregnancy. But, you know, we can certainly do a lot to prevent or reduce stress-related incontinence in pregnancy. So we know that if you are going to spontaneously recover from diastasis by about 8 weeks, that sort of gap will have come back to normal. But in 40% of women, it doesn't. So, you know, it's almost half of women that will need some rehab. And that's another big reason why I bang on about the six-week check and seeing a women's health physio, someone who's trained in this area specifically. Because, you know, GP is often not their skill set, and they're probably focusing more on your sort of social and emotional health and checking your baby. So definitely go back and have a listen to their recent podcast, just one episode back, I believe, on the six-week check. So, you know, that's really, really, really key as well. We know that it's normal. We know that it takes a couple months to heal that gap. If it's going to heal on its own, and then if it needs rehabilitation, then, you know, so we know that, yeah, 40% of them will still need some recovery and rehabilitation work to get that ability to transfer the load across her abdominal wall normal again postpartum. So, you know, that's close to half, and that's a lot of people. So that is why we are chatting about it today. So, what to look for. Assessment is via a curl-up task. So in the clinic or, you know, in the PT studio, your trainer will often get you to sort of do a little curl-up where you're laying on your back and you'll just lift your head and shoulders up, and they'll feel for the gap at the ziploid process or at the bottom of your breastbone and above and below the belly button. And those are the points where we're sort of checking to see what's happening. We're looking for not only just the gap, but is there more than that sort of 1 centimetre or so gap? But we're looking for what happens to the tissue underneath that. So is there a bulging? So, you know, similar to like what we'd see if we have a hernia, some tissue sort of, or, you know, you'll see some protruding of the material underneath it. There'll be a bump or a cone or what we call a doming. There can also be the opposite effect where there's a sucking in or what we call an invagination, like a valley between the rectus sheath. So we're looking for that. We're also feeling for the depth and what the tissue feels like. Is it sort of a bit soggy? Is that fascia feeling firm, or is it feeling like it's quite soft and easily moldable or movable? And what we really want is that it's quite firm when we load it, and that's what we look to rehabilitate if there is a gap and if there is a loss of energy. So energy loss will be shown as that sort of bulging or coning at that point because we're not able to maintain firmness of the abdominal wall. That's what we'll be looking for. Sometimes when we lose a lot of weight or don't have a lot of abdominal adipose already, you'll be able to sort of almost see a gap between the rectus sheaths, especially for women who sort of crash diet after having a baby, but also if you're just quite lean in general, or if you've done a lot of abdominal work too early, you know, exacerbate this and will be a lot more obvious. You can also maybe, although you might be back to your sort of normal size after having a baby, you might still have sort of like a pooch or a bit of an abdominal, like it looks like you might be a couple of months pregnant still, even though you're a number of months or even a number of years postpartum, and that's because that loss of that tensional integrity of the abdominal wall. So why do we care about this? Why do we care about the gap in the abdominals? Because not only do a lot of women, have a bother with the aesthetics of it, so, you know, it looks like we are pregnant and perhaps people are commenting sometimes, although it's so rude. And even people are pregnant and they are obviously pregnant, I feel like it's such a, I usually will wait for someone to sort of bring it up themselves if I don't know them well, because you just never know what's going on for a person. And my dry cleaning lady at about 5 months postpartum with Raph, my second son, said to me, "Oh, congratulations, looking at my belly." And I'm like, "That's not a baby. That's my abdominal adipose." I didn't have a persisting diastasis, but I do tend to gain abdominal fat and a bit of weight in general when I'm breastfeeding. Anyway, I never met this lady and it was a little bit rude. So I'm always so conscious to never mention something unless someone's like 40 weeks pregnant and there's just, you know, most likely no other explanation. So, a lot of women, it's quite bothersome for them because they do get a lot of those comments. They just don't feel like their old selves. But, you know, probably more so than this is the other symptoms that go along with it. And, you know, recent studies suggest that 66% of women with a diastasis will have other pressure-related problems or symptoms such as stress urinary incontinence, fecal incontinence, or pelvic organ prolapse. So, you know, it's more than just this gapping of the abdominals and an aesthetic thing for sure. So, you know, looking at other studies, according to Smith et al. In 2008, the impairments of our abdominal wall are implicated in multiple conditions of pregnancy and delivery, including low back pain, pelvic girdle pain, pelvic organ prolapse, and urinary incontinence. So this is further backing up what I just mentioned before. And there's a strong evidence of a relationship between pregnancy, back pain and incontinence, thoracic posture and pelvic organ prolapse, as well as a strong association of breathing and continence disorders, back pain. So there's a lot of research and sort of bows that we can draw between all these common sort of groups of symptoms. When it comes to the research around diastasis, particularly in how to rehab or rehabilitate women postpartum, there's not a heap of research out there, particularly in terms of clinical guidance. So I'll come to it sort of shortly. But in terms of rehab, we need to really treat the whole person, the whole woman, what's happening in terms of what other symptoms might you have, particularly if there are other continence or pressure-related issues, fecal incontinence, pelvic organ prolapse, which will present as perhaps heaviness in the vagina. You might have an obvious protrusion of some of your pelvic organs below the entrance to your vagina, and they're definitely, it's a whole other kettle of fish, but that is something that can be coexisting with diastasis. And so we really need to consider the whole pizza rather than just this sort of gap that might be happening in the abdominal wall. And so many things will affect the recovery, not only your posture, the way you breathe, the way you load, transfer load in general, how other muscles of your trunk and abdomen are working, and how your pelvic floor is functioning. There are so many sort of different little, I guess, puzzle pieces that need to fit together to help you to recover optimally. So it's not just about closing the gap, it's about restoring intrinsic core function, and pelvic floor function is a really big part of that. So we want to look to restore that tensional integrity, or the ability to transfer load across the abdominal wall without those symptoms, so without any continence mechanism being affected, and without seeing that sort of doming or invagination across the midline of the tummy. And if we can restore this intrinsic function and we have no pressure-related symptoms, then we can, start to add load and do the things that we love to do or love to do prior to pregnancy and prior to becoming a mum. So, we can then start to add back in sort of front-loaded tasks like planks and push-ups and abdominal hypertrophy work, bicycle crunches, things like that that you might want to do and might be part of your sort of, yoga and Pilates and things like that that you're used to doing. So in ladies that have never had a baby, we know that pelvic floor and transverse abdominis, that deepest layer of our core, activate together and in synergistically with our breath. So when we breathe in, the pelvic floor and the transverse abdominis relax, and then when we breathe out naturally, in asymptomatic ladies, pelvic floor function and transverse abdominis function has a natural core synergy, or what we call natural core synergy, where when we breathe in, the pelvic floor and the transverse abdominis will relax, and when we breathe out, the pelvic floor and transverse abdominis contract. And so this is often lost, this natural core synergy with the breath is often lost through pregnancy and childbirth. There's a lot of stretch and a lot of mechanical load and perhaps some mechanical damage to the pelvic floor that happens with the vaginal birth, or even through cesarean section. We're obviously going to be cutting through that transverse abdominis sort of area, cutting through layers of tissue to get through to the uterus. So these things can be affected, and the natural core synergy can be lost, and most often is through either of or both of these processes. And that's why I'm really big on cueing the correct way to activate our pelvic floor and deep core, just as part of regular exercise. So you'll find in our Rosehip platform throughout pregnancy, I'm sort of teaching it with every single class, every single exercise. There's this really high level of cueing around how to activate the pelvic floor correctly in synergy with the breath, because if we learn it really well in pregnancy, then it's sort of like just, you know, riding a bike, we get back on after having a baby, and even in the presence of pain and perhaps having a lot less time, we naturally know how to do it and can start to bring it into everyday tasks, such as just, you know, bending over, sitting to standing. We do it before we cough or sneeze to give support to the abdomen and the pelvic floor. Yeah, that's why I'm really, really big on that cueing. And you can find that in our pelvic floor episodes earlier on in season one. So that's how we can start to help from the sort of very get-go, is obviously doing the work in pregnancy to help, you know, really get the brain and the core connected, to help minimise the extent of the diastasis in pregnancy. So the more we understand load transference, correct breathing, we can support our abdominal area with good technique just for everyday tasks, and avoid things like sort of sitting straight up in bed or from the couch in pregnancy, so you're not doing that concentric shortening or lots of ab work in pregnancy where you'd be compressing the tummy. We don't want to do that anyway because there's not much space in there and we don't want to squash the poor little bum. So, yeah, the more we can sort of prepare in pregnancy, then we're going to set ourselves up for better success postpartum. So we want to avoid any tasks or movements that cause the symptoms of diastasis. So just as I mentioned, especially if that includes you know, lifting anything too heavy in those early weeks, making sure you're rolling over to get out of bed and to get off the couch and things like that, and you're aware of how to support your tummy and pelvic floor with correct breathing and activation on everyday tasks that require load, such as a cough, a sneeze, lifting something, etc. So we know that the curl-up task or the sit-up can be a good way to start to rehab the pelvic floor if done with that correct core synergy. So an exhale and a lift of the pelvic floor, a tightening of the deep core before we lift the sort of head or just the shoulder blade. So, you know, you'll have that assessed if at your six-week check with a physio, and they can give you some instruction on how to do that correctly and to do it in a way that does have integrity across the gap. So, yeah, that certainly can be, surprisingly, one way to help rehab the gap, even though sit-ups get a lot of flack. I guess it's not just a straight sit-up or a traditional sit-up, but a very mindful and specific way of doing it. So that's why we need to go and see our women's health angels for sure. So who I've done a lot of my training through is a lady called Jenny Burrell, does a lot of education for women's health physios and women's health trainers, and she talks a lot about starting in the sagittal plane, so in the front to back plane, and sort of in a more upright position, so we're not doing sort of front-loaded positions early on after having a baby. We are not doing sort of twisting and things like that with load. Certainly like rotation of the spine to help maintain mobility is healthy, but not doing loaded oblique work or hypertrophy work because of where the obliques attach. They attach into that midline and they're going to pull on the midline and separate it further if we do too much of that too early on or before we've rehabbed our capacity to transfer load well in more simple tasks. So in a sort of really simple fashion, you know, we also think about simple exercises before complex. So isometric exercises or isolated exercises before doing compound exercises, the simple things where it's just one movement, one thing to focus on before going into complicated things like walking lunges, twisting lunges, things like that. We always start simple and then move towards more complex. We start static, so we're not sort of moving more than one body part at a time and then progressing into more dynamic where we're moving the whole body and we can consciously still maintain that core connection. And then we start body weight before adding load as well. So it sounds a little bit perhaps common sense, but I think in keenness to sort of, you know, bounce back, which is a term I really hate, by the way, you know, women often sort of get a little bit gung-ho and miss these sort of early steps that will help to, you know, fully and appropriately recover their bodies in the postpartum period. One thing I wanted to flag is, you know, sometimes there are situations where conservative rehab, working with a physio one-on-one, you might do that for extended period of time and still might not have the results that you're looking for. You might still have that 3 or 4 centimetre gap or the lack of capacity to really get that load transference happening to stop the doming, the cloning, the invagination, to stop the pressure-related other issues. And you might be working for, you usually wouldn't look at a surgical referral before 12 months, but if you're at that point, been working really hard at it and there's still no progress, at about 12 months, there would be the consideration of whether or not it's worth seeing a surgeon. And it is a really big surgery to have a diastasis repair. So it's not something that is done lightly or without sort of significant conservative approaches first. Other things that you can do to sort of help expedite the recovery in those early weeks postpartum and help, that sort of gap to heal or the sort of general abdominal and pelvic area to heal is to avoid straining on the toilet to make sure that you don't get constipated. I think it's actually really common postpartum because we've got just hormonal changes. There might be medication that women are taking for, perhaps surgical or just, general pain postpartum. After pains are absolutely horrendous, especially multiple pregnancies, multiple babies later. I can easily, well, not easily, but definitely, always go for a pain-free birth, but or drug-free birth. But at times I have had to take some painkillers for after pains because they're literally the most, they can be so, so horrendous and you're already feeling a bit battered after having a baby. So it's really full on. But if we are taking painkillers, they can slow down our bowel motility and cause constipation. So lots of fluid, lots of high fiber veggies, pre-digested, pre-cooked foods, that sort of Ayurvedic style of eating is really helpful. And the positioning on the toilet, so a footstool is really good and a slight forward lean, or if you don't have a footstool, you can sit slightly forward and go up on your tippy toes so that your sort of knees are a little bit higher than your hips, and then just relaxing and allowing defecation to happen without forcing or pushing. Similar to how I like to cue or to teach the active phase of birth. Support garments can be really helpful and can be worn as soon as you feel comfortable. But my sort of really big bugbear, and while I've been working on support garments for postpartum for a number of years now, and they will be out soon, is that quite often, especially waist trainers and, sort of shapewear and things like that, women are sort of prone to wearing after having a baby. They give a lot of pressure to the tummy, but no support to the pelvic floor. And, if we think about thorax and our diaphragm pelvic floor as like a container, if we sort of squish the top of the container, where's the pressure going to go? It's going to go down, and the pelvic floor is probably already the weakest link. So we're just going to do a disservice to our pelvic floor by wearing firm waist training support wear that doesn't give any support to the pelvic floor. So that's just a big caveat there. So can't wait to release our stuff. It is coming. We've got some really good postpartum shorts coming out in July that will tick all of these boxes. And then we are working on some support underwear, but we're also working on putting in some gussets that support light leakage. So that's been a big development and will take a little bit longer, but our postpartum shorts do have light leakage support as well. So that's really great. But, yeah, definitely don't go for that super tight corset and waist training, especially if you have had significant damage to your pelvic floor. It's not going to do you any favours. They also don't allow you to breathe properly. And as you've heard and sort of heard me spiel on the research, breathing and sort of correct breathing is a really important part of our core function. So if our breathing, natural breathing mechanism is off, then we definitely can't get our core and pelvic floor going very well either. Slow and steady return to exercise. Wait till you get that 6-week check and, really get some guidance either via a one-to-one or via a sort of health professional approved online core rehabilitation programming. That's really, really key. The best approach is definitely that one-to-one start with until you've got good tensional integrity and can or have no sort of symptomatic diastasis. And then you can sort of progress to that sort of more online core restore program when you know you've got that good tensional integrity or you just know that you're not in that sort of more severe category at the start. We want to avoid ab work that gives you symptoms, that is deliberate in terms of loading and hypertrophying the obliques and is front-loaded, you know, on hands and knees in push-up or planking position. Our organs are the way the organs pressing on that fascia, which is potentially weakened, and, you know, we need a lot more core strength to be able to then support that weakened fascia and to support the organs. So it's something that we need to take our time getting back into. I don't think that we should avoid all that sort of stuff completely, but start with a wall push-up, and then when you've got good tensional integrity, then you start to move down to a supported push-up or plank on a chair, and then eventually on knees on the floor and then toes. So just smartly and a sort of smart and safe progression, building back up from basics. And even as someone who can, you know, bench press, you know, 45 or 50 kilos non-pregnant, can, you know, quite easily do, you know, 20 or 30 standard push-ups, I will always start back at that very basic level. We'll be launching an online core restore program for new mums in the coming weeks, so please make sure you sign up for that if you're interested. You can jump on over to our newsletter at lennyroseactive.com.au and subscribe to our newsletter at the bottom of our homepage. And you can learn more about diastasis of pregnancy in episode 28 of Mama Matters and in our pregnancy wellness membership, RoseFit, which you can find over at lennyroseactive.com.au/RoseFit. And we have both free and premium versions available to our pregnancy wellness membership, and the education hub is all included in both the free and the paid version. So you can learn all about correct pelvic floor activation, how to move it into your daily life, about prevention of sort of aggravating, you know, the condition of diastasis in pregnancy, how to exercise safely, how much, how often, how intense, so much more over at our RoseFit platform. So, yeah, I hope that's been insightful, useful. I'd love it if there are any other sort of health professionals out there that are listening and they've got key comments, questions, things like that. Definitely jump on over and send me a DM on Instagram at LennyRoseActive. And as always, if you're loving what you're listening to, please give us a shout out by screenshotting the episode that you're listening to and using the hashtag #MamaMatters or tagging at LennyRoseActive. And I can't wait to be joining you on the mic again soon. We're going to be chatting in episode 60 about early signs of labour and when to head to hospital. So, stay tuned and stay well, and I'll speak soon, mamas. Bye.
This episode is brought to you by Lenny Rose Active, Australian-owned, 3x mum and physiotherapist-designed luxe, active and technical wear for the pregnancy to motherhood journey. You can find us on lennyroseactive.com.au or on Instagram at lennyroseactive.